More than 1 million Wisconsin adults have experienced sexual violence in their lifetime. That's about one out of three adult women and nearly one out of every five adult men. That according to the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. It's a devastating experience for survivors and their loved ones. Sexual assault nurse examiner or SANE programs have expanded across the Aspirus Hospital system in Wisconsin, ensuring compassionate, trauma-informed care for patients who have experienced sexual assault. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Today, we learn about SANE exams and how teams of nurses are trained to respond to these traumatic situations, performing services that can help lead to justice for survivors of sexual assault. Amy Riegert is a registered nurse. She is the SANE coordinator with Aspirus Health. She joins us for the hour. Amy, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you for having me, Shereen.
I want to start by learning a little bit more about you. I mean, you're a registered nurse. So did you do the registered nurse thing before you got into the SANE program? How did that work for you?
Yes, to be a SANE, you need to be a registered nurse first. And then you can go on to do more specialized training. And there is a didactic course that's about 40 hours in the state of Wisconsin. And you can also do a 64-hour course optional with pediatrics as well. I've been a SANE for the last 3 years, SANE trained, and started working at the Aspirus Wausau Hospital.
Did you do other nursing before you entered the SANE program too?
Yes. So I have been a SANE, or I've been a registered nurse since 2018.
Okay.
And I started in a nursing home and also as an emergency department nurse. I also worked in quality as well as hospital supervision.
So what drew you to this particular line of nursing? This is a very specialized and very emotionally fraught a segment of the nursing population. So what drew you to it?
Yeah, I worked in a rural hospital in Medford, Wisconsin. So it's out of Taylor County. So it's a very small area. And I had a patient in the ER that had come in because she was sexually assaulted. And I did my best to care for her, but we ended up needing to transfer her to another location in order for her to get the specialized care that she needed. And so that kind of hurt my heart a little bit that I wasn't able to completely care for her at the location where she lives. So that is one of the bigger things that drew me to this type of work.
And tell me about the training that you had to undergo to prepare yourself for this role.
There is a multitude of trainings in the forensic field that specialize on trauma-informed care, best approaches when patients have gone through traumatic experiences. We go through different trainings on how to collect evidence, but mostly this type of work is how to deal with the patient's psychological needs, as well as capturing that forensic documentation and evidence collection. It's a role that consists of legal matters, medicine, and science.
So is the training done by medical professionals, or are there partnerships with law enforcement? How does that all work together? It seems like it's a very encompassing type of training that you have to undergo.
Right. The training that I received was from the International Forensic Nursing, so the IAFN. It's international. And the training was put on by the Wisconsin Department of Justice, and it was IAFN approved to be trained. So it's a certain curriculum that they teach to forensic nursing. So there's like a bookwork or didactic portion of it to begin with. And then there's also clinical skills afterwards. How to do the evidence collection, how to place speculums and anoscopes as well as skills.
So SANE sexual assault Nursing, is it the same as a forensic nurse examiner? Are those terms used
Yeah,
interchangeably or are they
those, that's a
different?
great question. Those terms are definitely interchangeable. SANE stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner, and an FNE, Forensic Nurse Examiner. Those are the same. They're kind of going more towards forensic nursing as broad term, because we do more than just sexual assault. We also take care of patients with domestic violence, interpersonal violence, strangulation. We do suspect exams as well.
We do
So it
suspect
kind
exams as well.
of,
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
yes.
So your role is multifaceted then. I mean, it sounds like there's a whole lot to it. How many people are on the team that you work with?
I work primarily out of the Wausau Hospital, and there are about 10 of us that work here in Wausau, but I also work. I'm affiliated with the other Aspires hospitals as well, so there are more of them outreaching to be able to cover the broad region.
Do they all kind of undergo this same kind of training, or are there different programs throughout the state that they can take advantage of?
Right, so everybody's required to do the didactic portion and then skills. That's kind of like your baseline of how you become SANE trained. And then from there, there's ongoing training. You can always go down all sorts of different avenues with continuing your education on forensic nursing. It's kind of an evolving modality. So we recommend that everybody kind of keep up on their training, learn different skills. There's just a faceted of different types of education that we can continue to do. I could probably talk hours about the different types of training, but we work really closely with the grants in Minnesota. There's a couple of different HRSA grants that offer education through the Midwest to retain and sustain SANEs in this region. So we're very grateful for the education that they offer.
What's the workforce like? I'm curious. Is this something that a lot of nurses are interested in, or is it something that you struggle to find enough people to go through it? And I say that just because I can't imagine the emotional toll that this job must take on the people who perform these exams.
I would say that there are many who are interested and very caring towards this population of patients. But it does take the right type of person to be able to sustain in that trauma world. Do you have to have a very strong self-care techniques to be able to process those tragic things that you're hearing? And disassociate that, this didn't happen to me. This happened to the patient, and we're so sorry that that happened to you.
Talk a
But
little
be
bit
able to.
about that self-care because I mean, you hear about this from firefighters, from police officers, even from journalists who are on the front lines of some of the the reporting that goes on. It's difficult to see these kinds of things happen day after day. What do you do to take care of yourself?
I think the biggest thing that I do is to speak with another SANE in our area and debrief about what we have heard. There's always something like, "Oh, I wish I would have said it like this," or "Maybe I should have documented this." There's just always things that we might kind of beat ourselves up as nurses because we're most of us are type A personality, want to get it just right, right?
Right.
So just to be able to talk through those little things, because those are the things that will eat at us, and know
Sure.
that we did our best for that patient that day, and to have that reassurance that we are doing good work and we are taking care of them. And that really helps to debrief and go through the case. Also, furthering education and kind of being immersed in it also helps me stay on track with, okay, I'm not alone in this world. Everybody else is doing this same type of process, and we're doing it the right way. And for me personally, I read a lot. So I definitely my indulgence of how I kind of process things and is living vicariously through somebody else in a book.
Sure, and losing yourself in some other world, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it sounds like you really get a lot of support from one another.
Yes, for sure.
You mentioned didactic training. What is that exactly? Forgive my innocence here, or my ignorance here,
Sure.
I should say.
That's just basically the coursework. It's more of you learning through watching videos, more of a coursework. And there is a seminar type of training that you go to where there's different speakers that speak about the different topics to learn all of the curriculum that you would need to learn.
It sounds like a really involved process. Does it take a long time to get the certifications that you need to join this team?
So you first have to be a registered nurse,
Which
and then you
takes
can
quite a bit
take
of time itself, right?
Right.
Right.
So that takes a lot of commitment to be able to get to that process. And then the to be SANE trained, there are two options the IAFN offers. So there's a 40-hour course that's just for adult and adolescent training. And then there's a 64-hour course, which is what the Department of Justice in Wisconsin is offering right now, which includes all genders and all patients across the board. And so there's some online work, pre-coursework, but then there's like a 40-hour in-person training. So that kind of gives you the base. And then you go to skills to learn the basic skills. So to be a certified nurse, which I just got my certification last fall, I'm a SANE A, so I treat adult and adolescent. There's a lot of studying work and to know all of the elements of being a SANE, and then there is a board certified test that you need to take. But to work in Wisconsin, you just need to do the SANE to be SANE trained.
Okay. I would imagine that a lot of you are, you're working at the same time. So you're not just sitting down one week and doing 40 hours of work, but you're doing this as you're also pursuing your career as an RN. Is that the case?
Yes, absolutely. This is a type of work that isn't typically, you're not full time. You're an occasional nurse. So this is something above and beyond your regular work duties, not to mention your family work as well, right? So you have to be willing to kind of step up to be able to continue to be able to make that fit in your life, to be able to do this extra training to take care of this population.
Amy Riegert is our guest today on Route 51. We're discussing the Aspirus SANE program and how a trained team of nurses is helping survivors of sexual assault cope and find justice through forensic examinations. I'm Shireen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're back on Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shireen Seward, along with our guest, Amy Riegert. She is a registered nurse and the SANE coordinator with Aspirus Health. We're talking about SANE exams now available at multiple hospital locations throughout our region and the value of that care. Amy, something you said a few minutes ago stuck with me, trauma-informed care. And I hear this, it's kind of a buzzword. We hear this a lot. What does it really mean, trauma-informed care?
Trauma-informed means that you're going to take the time to assess the patient and the surroundings of this individual and determine what it is that they need, what would be the best approach, what would work best for them. And so to do that, we ask, what happened to you? And start there. Or how can I help you today? And to be just a more softer approach to be able to meet whatever the patient needs for that day, for that moment.
Has that approach evolved, changed over the years? I feel like a lot of things have changed over the years. I mean, when I was a kid or when I was younger, we just didn't talk about this stuff. Nobody went,
Right.
nobody went and had a sane exam. Nobody talked about trauma. So, I mean, how have things changed?
Yeah, I really think that things have evolved. And when I was a child as well, we didn't talk about those certain things. Or if you did say something, people just say, brush it off a little bit, I think that it's just more important that people are heard. And this development of trauma-informed or patient-centered care, is another word probably has been used in the past, is just a way to really recognize what is the best way that we can help, what is the best approach.
And I do want to mention, and I will mention it again throughout the program, that to speak with someone anonymously, there are resources available. You can call RAIN 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233, or the Women's Community Sexual Assault Victim Services line, 715-842-7323. Or 1-888-665-1234. We will also post that at WPR.org/route51. So tell me a little bit about what happens during the exam. I want you to start with how quickly after an assault it needs to be done.
So, our protocols are to treat a patient with sexual assault within 5 days. That is the best way that we can perform our medical forensic exam and also be able to collect forensic evidence. So, within 120 hours or 5 days.
Okay, that's best practice. You want to get in there. Just how do people come to, do they go to an emergency room? How are they referred to?
People are referred in multiple ways. They can come directly to the emergency department. They can report to law enforcement or call the women's community and talk to an advocate. And there's multiple ways that they can come to us. But we practice out of our emergency department and have a safe, secluded area where we can perform our exams in a private setting.
How long do they take?
They do take quite a while. I would say that they would take 4 to 6 hours, depending on the patient's needs.
That long. Okay. Is there a cost for the exam to the survivor?
There is not a cost for a sexual assault exam. There is a fund in the state of Wisconsin called the SAFE Fund, and they cover sexual assault exams.
Without getting too explicit, what kinds of evidence does a sane exam collect? What are you looking for? Do you look under the fingernails? I mean, all of that kind of thing that we see this kind of stuff on television, right? So
Right.
is that what we're talking about here?
So what happened to the patient is what will guide our evidence collection.
Okay.
So wherever they're telling us that the patient was touched inappropriately or assaulted, that's where we will collect our evidence. And the evidence are kind of what you see, like on CSI. They're long Q-tips that we will swab areas of the skin in order to be able to find DNA. And here in the hospital, we won't be able to know if we've collected the DNA or the enough of DNA, but we will package it up into our forensic kit and send it either to the Wisconsin Crime Lab or law enforcement if they're choosing to report.
That's my next question. I want to know about the relationship with law enforcement. What if you have a patient who is adamant about not wanting to report the assault?
If a
What
patient
happens?
is over 18, it is their choice to report their assault or not. So we can collect the kit anonymously and send it to the Wisconsin Crime Lab, and it will sit on a shelf until they're ready to report for up to 10 years.
I guess this begs the question for someone who is adamant about not wanting to report the assault, what would you say to them about why they should come and get the exam done anyway?
They might not be ready to report right now. But they might find out in a couple of years this happened to somebody else. And that might change their mind that, oh, that actually happened to me too, and I would like to report, but I don't have the evidence. So it's a way to be able to save your evidence and then make that decision when the time is right for you.
What about underage patients? What happens when you get someone who is under the age of consent?
Under the age of 18, I, as a nurse, am a mandated reporter. So I would need to report that to law enforcement, and provide the evidence to them as well.
I think about situations in which a child comes to the emergency room, a child comes to you, and you've got to notify the parents. And do you, I mean, I guess I'm making an assumption here. Do you have to notify
Right.
the
Well,
parents?
in the if they're over 12, then they have reproductive rights. And our program is considered a reproductive program. So technically, I would not have to notify their parents if they didn't wish me to tell their parents. But I would have to report it to law enforcement. It's up to them what they disclose to them.
And what about in the situations where you have to report to their parents? And I mean, then there's cases where the suspect might be the parent or the guardian. These are tricky situations. How do you manage that? How do you navigate that?
Well, that is where a relationship between law enforcement, social services, and advocacy can really help partner that interdisciplinary approach on what is the safest way to approach the situation. So together, we will ensure safety and that the proper channels are notified and create a good plan.
Talk about the role of social services too, and how that plays into what you do.
So, as a mandated reporter in the state of Wisconsin, I have to report to either law enforcement or to social services. But our SANE program is, we just feel it's very vital to be able to make sure that everybody is notified that they can receive the best services and resources afterwards, right? So, we report to both services. We would call social services and we would also call law enforcement just to make sure that they have that relationship. That all of the channels have been connected, I guess.
Okay, in the situation where you have someone come to you, they are ready to report it. They have the exam. What happens next? You call the police. The police come. Take me through that.
Sure. So, if the patient is up for it, we can call law enforcement that day and they can do an interview with law enforcement. At the hospital or schedule a time outside of that to give their statement to law enforcement. Typically, they will have an advocate with them that will help them through that process and be able to help with that, the pacing of that. And if the patient needs a break, they're very helpful that way to see those signs and are very trauma informed. So if the patient chooses to report, typically I will call law enforcement, let them know that I have a kit for them to pick up. And if the patient's ready, then they can give their statement to law enforcement. But I package up the kit and then we do sign off to law enforcement and then they're in custody of the kit.
What happens to the kit then? I mean, where does it go? How is it processed, and what's that process like?
Sure. So if they go to law enforcement, the law enforcement adds it to their investigation. They may have other things from the scene of the crime or other things that need to go to the crime lab, and they all goes to the crime lab, and they will be going through DNA testing. Now, it's not a super fast process to go through DNA testing. I believe it's like 4 to 6 months, depending on where the caseload is. So that process can take a while.
4 to 6 months. That's a long time for someone
It
to
really
wait.
is. It's a long time. What Wisconsin has done to assist with this kind of a lag in the system is they've created a track kit, and it is the Wisconsin track kit. So our kits have barcodes on them that we are able to enter into the system. That the Aspira Suwassa Hospital has had this kit, and then I had transferred it to law enforcement. law enforcement scans it in on their side, and then it goes to the crime lab. And the patient gets a copy of this tracking. So it's not chain of custody, but tracking system so that they can kind of see, well, where is my kit? And be able to log on and see where it's at within the process.
In the time you've been doing this, have you seen an improvement there? There was a lot of talk for a few years about this enormous backlog of untested kits that were just sitting on shelves. Has that been resolved? Is it better than it was?
Yeah, it's definitely better than it was. They had a work group around that project, and they're doing very well with that. I don't know specifically what those statistics are today, but I know that that work group had made great strides on getting that resolved in the state of Wisconsin.
When you tell someone that you're working with that it could be months before their kit is analyzed, what's that reaction like?
I think it's a little disheartening at first, but
Yeah.
the whole justice system does take a while to get through. So just kind of telling them up front and being honest about that, I think helps with that process down the line when they're now talking with law enforcement or now they're talking with the DA's office to press charges, that they kind of already have an idea that this is going to take a little while to get this prosecuted.
When something is prosecuted, has your role already ended, or do you sometimes participate in that process too? Do you have communications with the DA's office, or potentially have to testify at trials?
I can be subpoenaed to testify during their trial, should it go to trial. So then I work with the DA's office to determine which parts of my exam will be discussed, whether that's going through my documentation, pictures that we had taken, and review that on the stand.
Is that daunting for you?
It is a little daunting, but it is kind of a unique privilege as a nurse to be able to provide that level of knowledge or share that patient's experience. Maybe they don't want to testify, and I can speak on their behalf. And that brings a little warmth to my heart to know that I can be that voice as well and state the facts of what happened within the case.
It sounds like you can sometimes develop something of a bond with the people that you're helping in these situations. Have you found that to be the case too?
It is difficult as a nurse that I get to interact with them during that exam. That is my time with them to be able to provide them the best care and service and resources. But then after that, I don't have that follow-up to know what happened, unless we meet later in court. So that's why we truly love to have advocates with us in our exams because they can be that person that can follow up with them and help them get through that judicial side of things and follow them through.
So an advocate can be present during those exams. Is that somebody, say, from the women's community or from an, I mean, who would that person be?
Yes, so typically we are calling the women's community here in Wausau, and they have special sexual assault advocates that arrive at the emergency room. If the patient chooses for them to be in the room and can be that support person for them and really help set the pace for the exam and just be that person for them, their support person.
What about other counties and areas that have the same programs at Aspirus? Do they have similar programs in place where they also have advocates that can come into the room and help guide survivors through the experience?
Yes, they do. Each county has their own advocacy agency.
Okay, so there's always some kind of support. There's always somebody there to help that person through it.
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the fact that it's not always women, right? When we think about sexual assault, often we think about sexual assault against women, and there's children who are victimized too, but men also can be sexually assaulted. Do you offer services for men as well?
Yes, we do offer services for men as well. And They definitely are less than women, but I think that's more of a stigma of not coming in and knowing that there's services here that we can also care for them as well. We care for all genders and including the LGBTQ population.
All right, certainly. And there are advocates for those people as well. Then they also have the ability to have someone advocate for them when they're going through all of this. Yes.
Yes, there are special sexual assault advocates, that can come and help.
When I think about what it must be like to go through one of these exams, I would imagine that sometimes survivors can feel as though in this 4 to 6 hours that they're in this room having evidence collected, that they're being violated all over again. How do you, as a sane practitioner, ease that pain that they're feeling and ease that anxiety and help them through what has to be probably the worst day of their life?
Yes, that is one of our main goals, is to give them some autonomy back. We're asking them permission with every step of the way and making sure and reassuring, are you okay if we do this next? Is this a good time? And really allowing them to control how the exam will go, and they can choose whatever services they want to choose. If I want to take a picture of a bruise on their left arm and they don't want me to look at their arm, then that's okay. That's their choice, and we'll move on to the next step if they're willing to.
So the patient is always in control of what's happening to them during this time.
Yes, they are making all of the choices.
Do you ever find yourself frustrated when you know that something could help and the patient is resistant and saying, I just am not comfortable. I just can't have you do that. How do you feel?
Right. So I always kind of preface it that you have all these choices, right? So you don't want me to look at your left arm, but I might give you a couple ideas of why it would be a good idea for me to look at your left arm. But if they still choose not to, I'm not going to talk them into it. Just ultimately it is their choice, and that is sometimes hard to swallow, but they have their reasons, and sometimes it's safety reasons why they cannot do all of the things. And I respect that they know what's best for them.
You're listening to registered nurse Amy Riegert. She is the SANE coordinator with Aspirus Help as we can health as we continue our discussion on SANE exams and care for survivors of sexual assault. Again, to speak with someone anonymously, there are resources available. You can call RAIN at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. You can call the Women's Community Sexual Assault Victim Services line at 715-842-7323 or 1-888-665 1234. I'm Shireen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Amy Riegert, SANE coordinator with Aspirus Health, stays with us for the hour on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm going to give you those resource numbers once again. Speak with someone anonymously. These are open 24/7. They are free and confidential hotlines. RAIN at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. And the Women's Community Sexual Assault Victim Services line is 715-842-7323 or toll free 888-665-1234. How crucial are these exams to the justice system, to finding justice for victims who come to you and have been assaulted?
I don't know if I can answer that real specifically, but I know that the DA's office appreciates when there is a SANE exam done because we have thorough documentation that asks very detailed questions about what happened to them. And the forensic evidence that we collect can prove if the DNA, if that person was there or not there, which will help in convictions.
And as we talked about earlier, this wasn't the way things were always done. I mean, these exams were not done years ago. Do you have a sense of how new they are? I mean, how they kind of came into being, and how they've changed over the years?
It is a newer nursing modality. I think in the 1990s, and I'd have to go back and study again. Sorry, but it is a newer nursing specialty, and the International Association of Forensic Nursing was established to help establish guidelines and protocols so that we're all doing it the same way because there wasn't a response at most places. So to be able to help guide the community and in with those best practices to be able to care for patients who have been sexually assaulted, it was a need. It was very important, and it's still evolving and growing.
There has always historically been such a stigma against sexual assault victims. I mean, victims of survivors of sexual assault often feel like they were at fault, like they could have done something different. Do these exams tend to help empower them? I mean, have you seen a shift in attitudes, or is that still really a problem?
I would say that overall it's still a problem. People still feel shame and guilt. And even when they come in for the SANE exam, they express those feelings of maybe I shouldn't have done this or I shouldn't have done that. But ultimately it's about consent. And if it was consent or not consent. I had another thought there. I'm sorry. I lost it.
How do you reassure survivors that they're doing the right thing when they come to you?
We're upfront and we tell them that we are so glad that they're here and that we're proud that they made the choice to come in for the services today. Even if they aren't recording or don't even want the forensic evidence collected, they're there for their medical care and can be offered emergency contraception. They can be offered prophylactics for STI and even HIV. So at least they can be reassured that they are not going to be pregnant from this occurrence, and that they are taken care of medically as well.
Earlier, we were talking about the process, and you said that within 5 days is really the window that you need to see somebody after an assault happens. That feels like a long time. I mean, 5 days, is it really possible to get everything that you need 5 days after an assault happens?
Yes, I think I've read studies too where DNA can still be collected even after 5 days and still get a hit. So the medications that we offer are good for the 5 days. So that's why I think that it also follows that protocol of evidence collection as well.
What are you hearing about the results of these services? In other words, what do we know about the benefits of sexual assault nurse examiners? How does it benefit the patient emotionally or physically compared to what was available years ago?
I've heard tales in the past where they weren't heard or not listened to or maybe treated poorly. So I only hear just vast appreciation that it took the time to listen to them and care for them. And I think trauma is everybody grieves and experiences trauma differently. And I think that the public thinks that when you're sexually assaulted, then you must be hysterical and you should be crying and just distraught. But trauma appears in all different forms. You know, people could be laughing, they could be tearful, they could just be stoic and not actually have much emotion at all. So I think that's important to understand how that presents, and that we can take care of people differently as well, depending on how they are appearing. And to understand that it's different.
Talk about the most rewarding aspects of this job for you at the end of the day. What makes you think, yeah, it was worth it, what I did today?
When I see a patient at the end of our exam, we go through our discharge and safety planning. We have started a gift initiative, a stone initiative, we call it. So we have little worry stones that we give them. So we have a basket of them, and they get to choose which stone that they want. And they say hope or strength, or maybe there's a picture on them. And it just the patient will choose which one speaks to them, and they are just so appreciative of this gift. And it just really warms my heart to know that I was able to give them something back positively too. So that's one of the things that I really appreciate, and gain strength from to keep going, because they're very appreciative of the services that we've provided for them.
What about the challenges? What is the most challenging part of this job, and how do you manage it?
I think the challenging part is hearing really brutal things that maybe have happened to somebody, that it is sometimes more challenging to process. But like we talked about earlier in the segment, that self-care and debriefing about them help us process that challenge. Other than that, I would say, I don't know, all the different hours, right? That they come
Right.
in. Doesn't matter what time of the day, we're here for you. So
Yeah, I was going to ask about that too, because I mean, well, you're the coordinator, so maybe it's different for you, but people on your team, they're working other jobs in the hospital, right? I mean, they've got their regular job and then they're called away because something happens. How do they manage all of that?
right, like this is an above and beyond role. So we have to be willing to take that call at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, yep, I'm going to be available, and I'm going to come into the hospital and care for this patient. So that would, I would say, is a challenge, because that doesn't fit for everybody's life, right? To be able to just get up and go. So
Yeah.
it has to fit.
Sure. If somebody wants to go into this line of work, obviously they have to be a registered nurse. We talked about that. And then there's some training involved. But what advice would you give them on where to go to learn more, to find out if this is really for them? What would you say?
Yeah, I would have them go to the IAFN.org. So with the International Association of Forensic Nursing, they have many different free educational things that you can take a look at, see if that would fit for you. Also, WisconsinForensicNurses.org is the Wisconsin chapter for the IAFN. Or you can also visit the Wisconsin DOJ SANE site.
Is it expensive to get the training, or are there some grants and things available for people who want to do this work?
Some of the training can be expensive, but there are grants available to be able to get the same training for free. There's initiatives here in our region, so in the Midwest, to provide free SANE training for the sustainability, to ensure that there are sexual assault nurses available to care for these patients, even in small rural towns.
And I did see that that Aspyrus has expanded into some of the more rural hospitals. I mean, how crucial is it to get those services in the more rural areas?
I find it very important. Like I had said at the beginning, one of the reasons why I've gotten into this is that I think it would be very distressful to know I've been sexually assaulted in a small little rural area and have to drive more than an hour, maybe sometimes two, depending on where you are in Wisconsin, to get the services that I need. So creating programs for the patient to stay where they are, where they live, is vital for the community.
Do you envision more of these services becoming available over time? Do you think that this will become more and more prevalent for people who have been through these situations?
Yes, I'm working towards opening more programs in the other Aspirus locations.
With respect to sexual assault, do you feel that the numbers of sexually assaulted of assault reports have gone up? Is sexual assault more prevalent, or are we just hearing about it more?
I would say for statistics-wise that we have some higher months than others, but in the end, that all kind of rolls out to a pretty status quo average that are reporting. Maybe a little bit more of an uptick, but nothing substantial.
All right. Maybe we're just hearing about it more. You know, sometimes that's it. You know, I mean that we're just hearing about the reports. So I want to ask you what you would say to someone who has been sexually assaulted and they're sitting at home and they're thinking, I don't know if I should do this. I don't know if I should get the exam. I don't know if I should report it. What would you say?
I would first say that I'm so sorry that this happened to you and acknowledge that this did happen to you. And I would recommend that you come in to seek medical forensic care, and then we can talk about the options on whether you would want to report or whether you would want to move forward with anything. But at least come in for the medical aspect of it to ensure that your body's healthy and that you can get resources for you to be able to make a better a choice, a more can't find the word, a better, not a better for you to make a choice.
Are there enough resources for sexual assault survivors today?
Yes, in our community, there are resources available to you.
And how crucial are those services? I mean, there have been discussions over the years about slashing funding for the women's community, for example, in Marathon County. I mean, what would be the result of that, in your opinion, based on what you see in your work?
Yes, I have heard that the funding had been cut as well, and that would be devastating if we wouldn't be able to have advocates at our sexual assault exams. They are crucial to the patient's healing process to be able to move on from this and to be able to seek counseling and services to get through and to be healthy and safe in the future. Those resources are vital to have in our community, and it would be just a devastation if they were not available.
What do you wish more people knew about the sexual assault services that are available and what can be done in the community?
I wish people knew that the service was available. That if somebody had said to them, I was sexually assaulted, the first thing that they think about is, we should seek services and see if we can get help.
Some of those places to get help, we're going to give those numbers again. We will also have them at wpr.org/route51. If you would like to speak with someone anonymously, there are free confidential hotlines available. One is RAIN at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. And the Women's Community Sexual Assault Victim Services line is 715-842-7323 or 1-888-665-1234. Amy, thank you so much for being here today. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Once more, sincere thanks to our guest, Amy Riegert, and the team at Aspirus Health for sharing this information with us today. Ezra Wall and Joy Ratch-Kramer assisted in producing this program. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program and our previous programs at wpr.org/route51, where we will also share these resources with you. You can also hear our programs on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.